4,625 kilohertz.
From KCRW, this is Here Be Monsters. And before we start the show, I want to share some news. We've got some new t-shirts by Portland designer Adam Fine. They're available now on our website, hbmpodcast.com/store. Okay, here's the show.
I think it just started with a phone call of a guy who knew a bunch of us who had shortwave radios, who called us up and he said, you know, I'm hearing this weird thing that I think is actually like some kind of coded message. Come over tonight, bring your shortwave. So you have to put it in context. The Berlin Wall had just fallen. There was still a Soviet Union. When somebody tells you, holy shit, I just found spy stuff, come over, you know, you really don't say, nah, I'd rather stay home. You don't. Not in 1989. Shortwave operates almost as this shadow to the more popular modulated wavelengths. I mean, so if you're listening to FM or AM, you're getting things that are clearer and louder. But when you listen to shortwave, the interference and the dissonance are part of it. So it's almost like a shadowy underbelly to typical radio listening. Noisier and darker and murkier. Interference and dissonance. It's like if you did, you know, think about your house right now. You're pretty familiar with your house. What if I told you that you have a basement underneath your basement, and that nobody has stepped in that basement for over 50 years? How excited would you be to find that door and turn that flashlight on and go down those steps?
Here Be Monsters, the podcast about
things coming in and out of static.
The podcast about
the unknown.
My dad had a shortwave, a transoceanic, a Zenith transoceanic radio. God knows how old it was. I mean, the antenna on that thing is probably an inch thick at its widest diameter and extends 6 feet up in the air. It's gigantic. You know, you can pick up stuff from all over the world. And then, of course, in the instance of the number stations, you can hear direct transmission.
Delta Foxtrot Delta 2 1 Delta Foxtrot Delta 2 1.
So number stations that turn up in the Cold War, right? They turn up in a time of paranoia. And so the stories that spring up around them are paranoid because it's paranoid people that are telling them. It's at a time of the world in the world where if something mysterious and powerful happens, it's probably a government, either your own or a hostile one, doing something sketchy.
There was something in the back of a popular science magazine, like, you know, number stations. Hear the communiques of the spies. MI5, MI6, KGB, CIA.
There's something weirdly compelling about them. You get the kind of the sort of eerie radio whine. You get these kind of beeps and whirs and clicks like a fax machine on the air or something. And you hear kind of things coming in and out of static. They have this beautiful kind of aesthetic, which in itself kind of just sucks you down this kind of rabbit hole of just listening to the sort of crackly, weird, warbling quality of them. The actual stations themselves broadcast these strings of what sounded like random numbers, usually in groups of five. These numbers would be read out by sort of a recorded robotic voice. So it sounds something like 5, 3, 6, 9, 7. 5, 3, 6, 9, 7. And in addition to the numbers, there would also be other stations broadcasting things like warbles, tones. Some broadcast little chunks of music.
There was no Wikipedia. There was no Google. Nobody was asking Jeeves anything. I mean, this is the kind of bullshit that you could occupy your time prior to the internet. Some people would be sitting there with tape recorders trying to tape it. It would just be to listen back to it and be like, hey, can you figure out what they're talking, you know, what they could be talking about? Oh, you know, somebody write the alphabet down and see if the numbers match to letters and stuff. I mean, just, you know, sophomoric stuff when you go back and think about it. But at the time, we thought we'd like uncovered the Da Vinci Code or something. Yeah, it's massive.
Normally, if you're broadcasting a radio station, you have to have a license. You have to have a whole load of paper that says this person is broadcasting at this part of the spectrum and this is why they're doing it. So these stations were unlicensed and without any of the usual sort of paper trail that would allow people to find out why they were there, why they were doing what they were doing. And in order to run a radio station, of course, you need sort of real estate, you need aerials, you need people to man all of that, and you need power to run this stuff. And no government has ever outright said, yes, we were operating number stations, yes, they were being used for communications. There has been the odd kind of thing in the UK, for instance, where cabinet ministers have said things like,
yes, they're doing exactly what you think they are, and you shouldn't be listening to them, and that's the end of the conversation.
Which, that just makes them even more interesting, right? Here is this exciting new sort of space, but there were these kind of strange things lurking in it. They've kind of been this white whale of the radio spectrum for as long as people have been listening to them, because there is obviously a coding system producing the specific letters or the specific words that you're hearing. There is a key somewhere to unlocking this mystery. The part of your brain that wants to figure out systems latches onto that like catnip.
I remember one night we were up at like 4 o'clock in the morning and we were just spinning the dial. I mean, it's almost like a Ouija board, Garrett. I don't really know how else to explain it. You just get into it when you do it. You know, we'd go to sleep, we'd wake up in the morning, we'd all go home and go back to our lives. And then, you know, weeks or months would go by and the phone would ring again. And it would be like, it's happening again. Come tonight.
I was hanging out with a lot of people who were into radio. And there were these kind of sort of bits and pieces of folklore of the spectrum. So people would tell you about these crazy things that they'd heard. And, you know, it's a little bit like a ghost story. And the thing that the internet has done is that it's allowed many more people access to the kind of raw material. When people started to put recordings of it and stream it onto the internet, people started posting sort of like, we've been on a site visit, we've been to one of the places that people triangulated and we've found this military bunker there and there were dogs and we couldn't get in. And then a soldier came along and we were scared, so we left. And they post very spooky pictures of these kind of like concrete bunkers with bits and pieces of wire around the edges and old switches and stuff. Now, I don't know whether those site visits were true or not, but what I really love is that the story propagated so far that people were able to latch onto it in that way. And almost, I think it would almost be better if the people posting these site visits were making it up, because that would just mean that the story had kind of taken on this huge life of its own.
The intrigue surrounding number stations is that they are an amazing vehicle for storytelling, because you have no idea what they mean. You just know that it exists. And so you build a story around it to try to explain its existence. That you know, Umberto Eco would call it an open text, because it doesn't have any context, therefore it can be interpreted in any number of ways.
There are mysterious things making mysterious noises and doing stuff that you can't quite figure out. And so you tell your stories around the campfire to try and explain what the things are out in the dark making noises. I think it starts off being gods, then it's ghosts, and at some point, yeah, it starts being governments and corporations and hackers. The entity that you ascribe it to changes according to whatever's most powerful or the most logical explanation at the time, according to the culture that you're embedded in. You know what I mean?
It's a place. There are places. There are planes of existence. FM is a plane of existence. Shortwave is a plane of existence. That has corners, has limits.
Henry Cook is a technologist and designer from London. John Barner is a musician and teacher living in Athens, Georgia. John makes shortwave-inspired music under the name Shadow Time, which is actually what you're listening to right now. We have a link up on our website, hbmpodcast.com. And also on our website, we have a link to an online shortwave radio, where you can hear some still active number stations and other oddities in real time. The number station recordings that you heard in this episode came from the Conet Project, which is a huge archive of number station recordings. Find a link to that as well on our website, hbmpodcast.com. Garrett Tiedemann produced this episode of Here Be Monsters. Garrett is the producer of the White Whale podcast, which, in my opinion, sounds like spinning the dial of an intergalactic radio. This episode was edited by me, Bethany Denton, with lots of help from Jeff Emtman and Nick White. Here Be Monsters is part of the independent producer project from KCRW. Thanks for listening. More episodes soon.